housing struggles in the spotlight again.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, it's The Morning Open. Good morning, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Google has unplugged in China, and a decision on airplane subsidies. That's coming up. First, where's Wall Street? Numbers are mixed right now. The S&P off just slightly, just by a fraction of a percent. The NASDAQ flat right now. And the Dow up about 8 points, 10,793. European shares higher right now, under half a percent. And in Asia, shares were mixed. The Nikkei tumbled by half a percent today overseas. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner goes before Congress today to talk about the housing recovery. He's expected to reiterate that things on that front are still very, very fragile. It is a day a lot of lawmakers will be pointing at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which many believe were at least partly responsible for the housing bubble, the government's way of getting more people into homes. Julia Coronado is senior U.S. economist at PNB Paribas. She's with us live from New York. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning.
So this is a tightrope that Geithner's walking. How does he convince lawmakers he's all for reform, but then at the same time say, hold on, let's not go after Fannie and Freddie right this minute?
Well, I think that both Treasury Secretary Geithner and the lawmakers on Capitol Hill understand that housing is still in a fragile situation. And right now, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are pretty much the only providers of mortgage credit. So we really need to proceed with caution, even as we talk about what the future should look like.
What do investors think needs to be done about Fannie and Freddie?
You know, right now, investors have been confident in the government's backing in terms of the conservatorship. There's been relative calm and confidence in the mortgage market from the investor's perspective. I think everybody is looking for some clarity going forward. I don't think it's a situation that can persist indefinitely. But right now, investors are expressing some confidence in the federal government.
That's the understatement of the year, looking for clarity.
Yeah.
We've got existing home sales, Julia. The number's coming out in just a few minutes, about 7 minutes from now, and things haven't looked very rosy for a while. I mean, get out your crystal ball. What are we expected to see?
Well, I think, unfortunately, we're going to look for another decline. We'll see another decline in existing home sales in February. We've seen them falling for the last couple of months. Some of that could be owing to disruptive winter weather. Some of it is that it may be that the pool of potential buyers is tapped out, and really that's the big question that we'll be looking for. Unfortunately, I don't think February will give us clarity. It's going to take the spring selling season to see if we get a pickup there.
Julia Coronado, senior U.S. economist at PNB Paribas, we thank you.
My pleasure.
There's been a months-long battle between Google and China over censorship and supposed hacking issues. And Google's pulled out of the Chinese market now. Many worry it could further restrict internet access in that communist country. The New York Times reports China's biggest cellular phone company, China Mobile, is expected to cancel a deal that had placed Google's search engine on its mobile internet homepage that's used by millions of people every day. Kaiser Kuo is an independent technology consultant in China. He's with us right now from Beijing. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Steve.
So what kind of effect is this going to have on internet users inside China?
I think that the effect is primarily psychological. Google, unlike a lot of other American internet brands, has come to represent China as a part of a global internet. And I think that people are being made aware of the extent to which censorship has sort of cut them off from the rest of the world in some sense.
Your own gut feeling, Kaiser, is Google, able, do you think, to sort of sit out and say, well, you know, I mean, a billion plus Chinese, we're going to stick to our principles on this one?
I don't think that that's what they're doing. I think that they're not compromising on the principle of internet censorship here, but there's a lot of other pieces of Google's business in China that they are fighting hard to preserve.
But, hey, is this story more about Chinese freedom, or is this about, you know, the growth of this big American company, Google?
I think that the story has been cast as one all about Chinese internet freedom. I don't think that it's to be, you know, dismissed as something about pure business story. There's obviously a lot of ideology mixed up into this.
Well, Kaiser Kuo, independent technology consultant in Beijing, we thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Steve.
By the way, Google's been in a legal battle over in Europe, a battle over brand names, and the search engine was sued for trademark infringement by the luxury goods maker Louis Vuitton, a couple of others. But Europe's top court today ruled in Google's favor. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Tuesday, March 23rd, 2010, at marketplace.org. A broad financial and banking overhaul is one step closer to reality in the United States. A proposal to give the government new powers to prevent too-big-to-fail companies passed in the Senate Banking Committee yesterday. Now, the Democratic Senator Christopher Dodd's bill was sent to a full Senate vote without any amendments, and that dismayed critics who would like to vote on closing some perceived loopholes. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports.
Critics of the Senate bill say one loophole in Senator Dodd's proposal is to let the Federal Reserve keep lending money to struggling banks. FDIC Chairman Sheila Bair says that's the same as a government bailout. Many lawmakers, including Dodd, support amendments to get rid of the Fed's emergency lending powers, says Chris Bruce, who follows bank regulations for the Bureau of National Affairs.
There's a desire on both sides of the aisle to avoid a lot of the kind of unintended consequences that Chairman Bair is talking about.
Dodd's proposal also requires big banks to pay $50 billion into a fund to cover failing banks. But some critics say markets will see that as another TARP-like slush fund for badly run banks that should be allowed to fail. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
It's going to be a while before we know how much health reform actually helps small businesses, especially small businesses of one. Insurance exchanges won't kick in until 2014. Same goes for government subsidies to help people, including solo entrepreneurs, to buy coverage. Some of the self-employed, though, are already finding ways to get over that health care hump. From the Entrepreneurship Desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports.
By his early 40s, Martin Walker had risen to be IT manager at a big New York law firm. He had a good salary, great benefits.
And just about 2 years ago, decided to leave, set out by myself, something that I wanted to do for a while.
Walker was planning to launch a company to develop brain training software for improving attention span and memory.
One of the big questions that came up almost right away was, well, how are you going to get health insurance and how are you going to pay for that?
Walker has three kids. They've all had health problems. And since solo entrepreneurs can't access group health plans negotiated by employers, he turned to the individual market.
And we were looking at several thousand dollars per month to cover the family.
Fortunately, Walker found a solution besides simply not starting his business. He joined the 135,000-member Freelancers Union, founder Sarah Horowitz.
We're the only place where freelancers can group together as if we all worked for one large company and get health insurance on our own.
Walker got a family plan for $900 a month. But that group health plan isn't available to most solo entrepreneurs. It's only approved in New York State. Elsewhere in the country, though, newfangled options are cropping up for some of the self-employed.
We become the employer of record.
That's Gary Swart, CEO of California-based Odesk. And let me explain what he means. Odesk is an online matchmaker of sorts, hooking up companies that want project work done with independent contractors like web designers and freelance writers. Odesk normally takes a 10% cut of the contractor's fee. By paying an additional 10%, they can join Odesk's employee benefit plan.
We're going to take care of the taxes, the 401k plan, health care.
In essence, turning that self-employed contractor into the employee of an outsourcing company. An employee with health insurance, that is. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
States are going to have to pay nearly $3 trillion in public pension benefits in the coming decades. And while many states are on track to handle these hefty bills, several, such as Illinois, are in big trouble. Reporter Jay Field has more.
Illinois budget analyst Lawrence Massal has this bad news to share.
The state has not been funding its promises to its employees and its retirees, and instead has either borrowed or just skipped payments.
Using the pension money to cover essential services like education without having to jack taxes. That's left the state retirement system nearly $80 billion in debt, the largest unfunded pension liability in the nation.
And that is why we're calling for very significant reform of the pension system in Illinois.
For one thing, Illinois plans to reduce benefits for new lawmakers and judges, but Massal says there's something else Illinois can do. It can adopt a model for a well-run pension fund that is headquartered right here, west of Chicago, in the city of Oak Brook. Louis Gosiba runs the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund for city workers, from librarians to trash collectors. Last year, it earned a 25% return.
In 1994, I ran a Chicago Marathon, And that is probably the most physically demanding thing I did until I climbed to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro.
Summiting Kilimanjaro is something people have to do slowly. Kosiba says he's worked at the fun the same way.
Analyzing the risk that you take, it means having a broadly diversified portfolio.
And the fund has one other big reason for its success. The state legislature gave its Board of Trustees special power to force municipalities to pay into the fund even when they're broke. When Illinois lawmakers set up state pension plans decades ago, they saw no reason to do the same. They figured the state would always make good, but it hasn't. And now reformers say it should adopt the same rule the municipal fund did to break the cycle of shirking and borrowing. In Oak Brook, Illinois, I'm Jay Field for Marketplace.
The world's two biggest airplane makers, Boeing and Airbus, are braced for impact today. The rival companies are waiting for a crucial verdict over subsidies. Marketplace European correspondent Stephen Beard reports.
A long-running and bitter dispute reaches a critical stage. The World Trade Organization will rule on a complaint by Boeing. The U.S. company claims the European plane maker Airbus benefited from illegal and unfair subsidies, $4 billion in government loans. But Airbus claims that Boeing has received equally generous aid from Uncle Sam, and Airbus has lodged its own complaint with the WTO. Maggie Bergsma is an Airbus spokeswoman. She says the two companies will have to resolve this issue by talking to each other.
The only way out of this is to sit down and negotiate without preconditions to find a balanced formula for government support on both sides of the Atlantic.
But Boeing believes that Airbus is clearly in the wrong and should be forced to put it right. It wants Airbus to repay all its government loans. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And finally, you might think supersizing food orders is a thing of modern fast food. A study being released today in the International Journal of Obesity shows food portions in paintings and depictions of Jesus' Last Supper getting bigger and bigger over the years by 69%. Brian Wansink is director of the Cornell University Food and Brand Lab. He did the study with his brother, looking at art going back 1,000 years. And the Bible says Jesus fed the multitudes, and these guys say they can prove it. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.